What's up, guys? Welcome to the podcast. Today, I am in the studio with Tessa. Tessa, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. My name's Tessa Volpe. Wait, can I say that?
Yeah, you can say that.
Okay. Just confirming.
Why would you not be able to say your last name?
I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know if you have any special rules. Anyways.
No special rules. I would have let you know.
Yeah.
So it's okay. Full disclosure.
Yeah. Yeah. My name's Tessa Volpe, and this is kind of cool.
It's kind of cool.
I mean, you're kind of cool.
I'm kind of cool.
Kind of. You get the kind of status. You get the word cool.
What would I have to do to get to full cool status?
I don't know. Very few people ever reach that.
That's fair. Mm. Who, like, name a few people who have reached ultimate cool, you would say.
Ooh, I had a professor last quarter in my developmental psych class that was so cool. Like, she gets a soap, too.
Okay. Yeah. Got any public figures that maybe other people can recognize?
Well.
Or if not, that's cool too. Or not cool, rather.
Not cool. No.
All right. Yeah. So just your professor. Got it.
Yeah.
Just so I know what kind of coolness meter we're working on. But,
yeah.
You know, speaking of professors, I think that I know that. So tell me, what are you studying, Tessa?
I am studying Human Development and Psychological Services in the School of Education and Social Policy.
A.K.A. CESPE.
Yes, HDPS in CESPE.
Amazing. And so Tessa here has quite a lot of experience, knowledge, and just overall
He's lying.
Mental agility when it comes to matters of education.
He's lying.
And so that's, I mean, it's not true. It's what you're studying.
It is.
So I thought it'd be really interesting to get you in here and talk about education and, like, kind of like developmental psych and what we should expect from teachers and students and what you think about that. Because I have my own opinions about that, having been and still being a student, and also having taught other students in some capacity. Obviously not, like, as a professor, but you know what I mean.
Just
teaching and imparting knowledge in general. So, I don't know. Do you know... Tell me, do you have any thoughts right off the bat? Like, how do you feel about the education system as it is right now?
Wow. Feels like kind of a big question, but let me take it in terms of Northwestern.
Okay.
I think my professors here at Northwestern have been pretty positive. One of them reaching the cool status.
Yeah.
But honestly, the professors that have, like, the most impact in my mind are the ones that made a personal connection with me. Or obviously it was a topic that was for my major and I was, like, especially interested in, like, developmental psych, for example. I think one of the requirements for being a teacher should be empathy and compassion. I don't think it's worth being a teacher if you don't feel like you can connect with your students and understand where they are.
Okay. So tell me, like, empathy and compassion, are these, how would you measure that? Like, how would you know if someone's reached that point to where they can connect? Because I feel like that's pretty subjective. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I think I would ask the students. Like, in CESPE, we have this thing called a practicum, where basically you work for a quarter. And I think seeing, like, student reviews, if you're working in a classroom, for example, can be really powerful to see if you're good at what you're doing. And I don't think that means that you have to have empathy as someone who, like, is studying to be a teacher or is studying to be working in the educational field, but I think it should be something you have to learn, at least.
Okay, that's fair. Can you think back to a time, like, in your life, not in college, like, before college? Like, when you were younger, when, like, a teacher really made an impact on you, for better or for worse?
For worse would be in my junior year math class at my high school. I have dyslexia, and I had just gotten extended time the year before that when I was diagnosed, so I was still, like, learning how to use it. And, like, my professor... I guess he didn't really understand dyslexia or didn't understand the fact that I needed extended time for one of my quizzes. And he straight out, like, tried to deny me it. And I am legally, by the ADA, like, or ADAA or something like that, like, I'm required to have it. Like, it's something I should be required to have the ability to use. And he, like, straight out tried to deny me it. And I was like, oh, so you just don't understand.
Right.
Right. of course, and then I got the school involved, and
it all
worked out. But that's an example of someone in my life who just didn't understand what was happening in my life and didn't understand how I live and how I work and how I study and how, mostly how I read and write. His lack of understanding or his lack of ability to put him and put himself in my shoes was very detrimental to my outcome in class.
Yeah, that would do it, yeah. I would say. So do you think that stems from his not caring or is simply just him not knowing?
I mean, he'd been a teacher for a while by that point, and he was in graduate school as well. So I imagine that he gets a lot of exposure to different types of students. I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not in his head, so I actually don't... I don't know what his experience with it has been or if his lack thereof, if it's a knowledge problem. But I felt like it was a not caring situation. I remember at one point he said to me, "Do you really need it?" And I was like, oh, like, that's offensive.
Yeah. fair. I only ask because I think, like... I think a lot of what, like, when it comes to matters of, like, standardizing, it's really, really difficult to figure out where a line should be drawn when someone is, quote-unquote, doing their job. And what I mean is, like we were kind of talking about, it's very difficult to, like, quantify levels of empathy or understanding. However, we all know when there's, like, a teacher or any authority figure, really, that's, like, who's actively... who's, like, either nonchalance or, like, basically their act of not caring has really affected, or not knowing has affected our performance in, like, classes or in other, like, educational settings. So I wonder, like, what do you think could be done better in order to have that not happen? Because we all remember these times where bad things happen and, like, there's something wrong and we know, but it's like, how do we find a standard to hold everybody to? Because especially in, like, larger classes, you know, like,
yeah,
every professor can't have, like, a one-on-one relationship with all of their students and get to know them, etc. So, like, where do we find the balance, even though we can clearly see when something is not right? Like,
right.
How do we make it better?
So it sounds like you're asking me, where do we draw the line between not right, satisfactory, and definitely right, definitely empathetic, and definitely making that connection as a professor?
Yeah, or like over the top, like, because we have, you know, average teachers,
right,
and, like, bad teachers, but we also have good teachers.
Right.
And so I think that it's like, do we want standard to be good, or does average stay average, and that we really can't have less than that? Does that make sense?
I think.
So, like, what I'm asking is, let's say a teacher goes, like, I'll give an example, okay? So when I was in fifth grade, I had this science teacher named, maybe it wasn't fifth, it was, like, elementary school. I think it was fifth grade. I had this science teacher named Miss Radawan, and she was so fun, and I hated science, but because she took, like, it seemed like to me, she might not have, honestly, but she made me feel like she cared about me specifically and, like, how I was doing in the class, I wanted to do better in her class because I knew that she, like, cared, or she showed that she cared, even if she didn't. She made me believe that she cared, and it made me want to do better. And so, like, there's that, but should that be required, or should that be standard, or, like, does it depend? You know what I mean?
Think, like, that should be the standard.
Okay.
I mean, what's the disadvantage of having a teacher who's overly invested, or if it's not even overly, if it is the standard, who is invested in their children and wants them to succeed? I don't know, that feeling of, like, you know, realizing afterwards, like, wow, I, like, love science. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, realizing afterwards, no, I just love science because of that teacher.
Right, yeah.
Right. And, like, that's eye-opening to realize that there's a person in your life who shifted your perspective and your understanding and how you see the world because of how invested they were in you.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, why wouldn't you want more professors like that?
It's true. Like, because theoretically, if everybody could get that, then that would be ideal.
Right.
So here's the question, I think. I think for me, the point of contention comes where I feel like there are two schools of thought when it comes to this. is it the idea of we want to standardize education to make it as equal as possible for everyone, or do we want to afford the most amount of people the best education possible? And I think that there is like a really, really specific difference between those. So for example, Miss Radawan might have been able to do that for me, but maybe she wasn't able to do that for the rest of the class. Is that now fair? Or is it better, or is a better teacher measured by the level of competence that can be achieved across everyone in the class? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like that's what really I wonder about. Is it ethical, I guess, if you want to take it like to the extreme. Like, is it ethical to have teachers who, for whatever reason, maybe if it's not even favorites, but like express more of an interest or are more actively involved in one student's life more than another if the point of the classroom is to get everyone on the same page? Or is the point of the classroom to get everyone on the same page?
Because
maybe isn't, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
What do you think?
Wow. I mean, I would hate to be that all other student that is, like, not getting the teacher's attention. I can also think of examples of that in my life in the, 13 years I've been in school. But I think it would be an interesting point to look at that in, like, terms of timeline. Your example was fifth grade, right? Mm-hmm. So is there a critical period in a student's life where like they need the most support and investment from a teacher? My argument is probably until high school or even in the middle of high school. You like really need those teachers that constantly are motivating you and encouraging you to do your best. But at the same level, I mean, that would be amazing if you could have that encouragement from, you know,
all the time right?
As for everyone in the classroom, not just, you know, for select students. And I think an important point to make about these professors that are showing that investment is that even if they aren't, you know, making that one-on-one connection with every single student, these are also the type of people who provide the opportunity for the rest of the students to engage with them. So it's not like they might not have an inside joke or something with all of their students. It's kind of an extreme of a teacher-student relationship. But maybe they have, some version of, lunchtime with the teacher kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or some
office
sort
hours.
Of, office hours, exactly. Some sort of opportunity where students have the option to engage.
Sure.
I think those are the type of professors that would do that type of encouragement as well. But that was a really interesting point about, should we still offer that extreme investment and encouragement if only a select amount of students get it? That doesn't sound fair to me. As much as I want everyone to get that encouragement, if it can only come to some, it feels like that's not fair.
Interesting. I think, I don't know, I'm sure if we were dig into this, there would totally be a correlation between what people think about this and also to broaden that, what people think about the world. Mm. In general.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's a lot of what, if you look at capitalism and socialism, it's some people are afforded the opportunity in capitalism to be better.
Right.
And some people don't have those opportunities, even though it's technically available to everyone.
Right.
Whereas you could have a society or a classroom where everyone's on the same page, is doing the exact same thing, and is getting no special treatment from anyone. But we also see that as kind of cold. And one thing that I want to yeah, so I think it really does get kind of complicated. And then a completely different perspective to look at this at is you actually mentioned that it was a perfect pivoting point that you want to have teachers who are encouraging you to do your best and to No problem.
The mic.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Had some visitors.
Yeah, I got some visitors in the studio. but you were saying you want teachers who will encourage you to do your best and be the best that you can be. But I think, I don't say but. I would like to say though that I feel like that's a very, very Western and if not American, like, thinking, way of thinking. And so, like, another way to think about that is, like, what is the role of a teacher? What is someone's quote-unquote best? And, like, what does it mean to encourage someone to do that? Like, in some cultures, like, that's not a teacher's place to, like, encourage a student to do anything other than what's in their class. Okay. And so, like, I don't know. I find that interesting because, again, in my life, because my family is the way that it is, like, they're like, you know, you get as much information from everyone as possible, make your own decisions, right? But that's totally, like, not how a lot of most places, I dare say, are, in that, like, you know, people have a lot, some cultures have, like, a very specific, like, route to, like, this is where you're going to be and this is how you're going to get there. And so, like, for some people, I can imagine that would be, like, that's totally not a teacher's place, and, like, why are they, like, I don't know, putting things that are not their class, like, into my student.
Okay, kind of thing. I see what you're saying.
And so I feel like that's also part of it because, again, I would say that some of the best teachers I've had have been, like, mentors in other areas and, like, have stepped outside of their role as, like, I'm just going to teach you science. And it's, like, I'm going to teach you about life. And that's also crazy because it's, like you were saying, is that only acceptable, like, up to a certain point, like high school, where, like, a student should start to make their own decisions, or, like, you know, and like, there's just so much, you know. What do you think about that?
Wow. So it sounds like you're saying that having a teacher who was also a mentor made them a better teacher to you.
To me, yeah.
Okay, I can definitely agree with that. And yeah, I didn't even realize that. That's definitely and I agree that it's definitely a Western idea to see that your teacher should show this vast investment. Wow, yeah. I feel like there was so much there. One second.
I know. There was a lot. How are we doing on balancing act?
Yeah, we're doing good there.
Okay, cool.
Just one second. Brain Take is putting time, it all together.
It's also getting pretty toasty in here.
Yeah,
a little warm, but it's okay. I wish there was air conditioning. There's like a vent up there.
It's a big vent.
I mean, it opens to the outside, but...
It's fine. Anyway. We're fine. Anyway. We'll just overheat and die in here. Oh, that's because this podcast will record
when it closes. It won't close. Because if it closes, then, like, if there's no hole, then you die. You suffocate.
Okay. Wow. So. Great. Thank you.
Anyway.
Okay. Anyways, the role of a teacher.
Yes. Back to
Okay. Obviously, the role of the teacher, baseline at this point, like, not in you and I, not in our ideal society. Right now, 2019. Let's say in America specifically.
Okay.
The baseline of a teacher is to deliver information.
Yes.
Chemistry, math, like English, social reading and writing, social studies. Oh, I miss social studies. Shout out to Ms. Sherrock.
I totally don't miss social
excuse
studies.
Excuse me. Okay.
Shout out to Jay Cummins, though. I mean, he's a cool guy, but.
Yeah.
Hated social studies in
That's
history.
That's valid.
Anyway.
Anyways. Okay, so baseline, deliver information.
Mm-hmm.
You know? To teach, one might say.
One might say. To deliver information and to have it received.
Yes?
I would say.
Okay.
Because I think there's, like, think about how you can be really good at something and deliver information, but you could deliver it in a way that is not perceptible to the demographic of your class.
So then why are you receiving the information?
Well, I'm saying, like, to deliver and have it received.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
I thought you were saying, like, the students are giving you something.
No. I wouldn't say so. Not necessarily. Yeah, not baseline. You know, it's kind of like you send a text and, you know, send.
Delivered. Red. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but... Anyway,
baseline. Okay. So we're saying baseline, teach... And, like, there is understanding among the students about what you're teaching. You've come to consensus about what the material is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that there is a better way to achieve that baseline when a teacher is, like, an exceptional empathizer.
Okay.
Students will better understand what's happening in the room what's happening in the book, what's happening among their peers, if the teacher is showing investment and not just like investment in making sure you get an A or even investment in making sure you graduate, investment in them as a person. I thought what you were saying before, Kay Cummings, the guy, you said you hated social studies.
Jay Cummings. Yes. What about him?
Why did you hate social studies? Was it something about the class? Was it something about the teacher?
No, I thought he was a really great teacher, actually.
Interesting.
So, and so, but also, I think that our memories are so deceptive in the way that, like, I think about Miss Radwan, and I'm like, yeah, that science class was all awesome. I loved what she was presenting, and I loved her. Even though I could not tell you a single thing that I remember from that class, but that's what I think about the content that was in that class. And I was also, like, in fifth grade at the oldest. I was in Jay Cummings' class when I was in 10th grade. I can remember the things that we were talking about, and I remember how I feel about him, and those two things are separate. And I think it might be just because of how I have socially developed and understood that, like, I can, like, I could like Miss Redwan and not like science, but maybe, like, at that point, they were both, they were just, it was a package deal. And so in that sense, because I think where, I don't know where you were going to, like, go with that, but what I'm saying is, like, I don't think that he necessarily is the reason why I didn't like the content. I think I was at a point where I realized that the content just didn't interest me as much as other things did, and that he, it was his job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Like, I never thought about teachers as having jobs when I was in elementary school. Like,
they're just there.
They just are teachers. You know what I mean? And honestly, I remember, like, very similarly, maybe you could, like, speak to, like, this if it has happened to you in another way. But, like, I remembered, like, I remember the distinct moment when I was in, like, eighth grade, I think, when I realized and, like, fully comprehended that people play completely different roles depending on who they're with. And, like, both of my parents work in higher education. And I'm like, so my mom is someone else's teacher, but she's my mom. And also my teacher is someone else's mom, but it's my teacher. And so realizing that people can just be people and completely separate from the things that they do, I think also has a lot to do with education and how students perceive class.
Definitely.
So, again, like, going back to what you were saying, like, I think that, I think it's always hard to attach a developmental stage with an age, but, like, age range-wise or developmental, you know,
progression-wise,
I do think that there could be, if somehow you could, like, figure out how to measure, like, empathy, I would agree that you would want more empathetic and personable teachers who do more than just give information to students who will perceive the information as being part of their relationship with that person. And as they grow out of that and understand that they could be separate, understanding that this person can be teaching me information and that has nothing to do, the info doesn't have to do with the person doesn't have to do the info. But whenever that happens, so for me, it was pretty late, like eighth grade.
No, it's
like that's when
me too.
I would have needed to have that kind of connection to a teacher in order to fully engage with what was being taught.
Okay, so it sounds like you recognizing that a person has many, many roles. I mean, a person in someone who you had seen only in one role. Sounds like you're seeing them, this sounds very abstract, but as their whole human, as their whole self, and the many faces and many actors that we play. Are there any, like, human, or whole humans, I guess I'm saying, that when you saw them in, like, in, you realize, like this teacher, for example, when you realize they were in a new role, that they had many roles, do you think you better understood them because of that? Or do you think it only confused your relationship with them?
No, I think definitely not the latter, but also not really the former. Like,
okay.
I think it was, aside from that, it was just realizing that the content of what I was, how I felt about the content of what I was being taught didn't have to reflect how I felt about the teacher, which was how it was when I was younger. And especially in elementary school where, like, one teacher will teach everything, or at least that's how my elementary school was. Then, like, it was more complicated because it was like, well, this person's teaching everything. But, like, as you get up to where like different teachers are teaching different things, but you're still maybe in that developmental stage where like you associate the how much you like the class or the information with how well it's presented / how much you like the teacher, like that could be really detrimental. I loved science in fourth grade, but fourth grade science was who knows what. You know what I mean? Like,
rocks.
And I also suck at science now. And like chemistry and biology.
Major.
So yeah. So like, I don't know how much that has to do with that and how much of that is just my proficiency or interest in science, which is, I would say my interest actually in science is very high despite my low proficiency rate. But like,
maybe that was because Miss Radovan hit you and got connected with you before a certain period. Like maybe there is a critical period.
That's true. And maybe I only think about that. Right. I only think about it that way because of that formative experience that now, well, I know science could feel like this.
Right.
When really it may never feel that way again because, you know
what
I mean?
Fifth grade bliss.
Right, yeah. So good point.
I want to go back to something that you had mentioned earlier. The idea that... Jay Cummins, he's coming back.
Come on.
You liked him as a human and as a person, but you didn't like him as a teacher? So is there a distinction between, like, seeing them as, like, a human and, like, basically, can you be a good teacher and not be a good empathizer? Am I totally backing up on my idea?
Yes, you can. But that's not what I was saying about Jay.
Okay.
What I'm saying was, like, the class I did not like because I didn't want to sit in a classroom for an hour and listen to someone talk about things that I wasn't interested in.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
I didn't think necessarily, he may have, like, here's the thing. So, just because I don't like the information doesn't mean that you're a bad teacher. However, I do believe that if you are a really, really good teacher, you can find a way to make it interesting to more people.
Definitely.
And to the point where I would theorize that the best teacher could make it somehow interesting to everyone.
Definitely.
So I think there are levels. So in that sense, I guess, because I never would really think about it this way. Like, I wouldn't look back and be like, he was a bad teacher.
Mm.
But I do believe that he could have been better. Like, most teachers, I mean, everybody could be better than they are in anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, because, yeah, I still think that you can present information, anything, in a way that, okay, kind of like going off on a tangent a little bit.
Okay, okay.
Have you ever seen those YouTube videos where it's like an expert at something will explain a topic in like 5 different levels of comprehension?
No.
Okay, so
but
you should check it out.
Just in case the listeners have.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. It's really, really interesting.
Okay, give me an example.
Okay, I'll give you my favorite.
Because
it's about music. But there was also, like, they do ones on neuroscience and, like, all different types of things. So you should check it out. I think it's on Wired. But anyway.
Okay. So this is about music.
Yeah, so there's this musical genius named Jacob Collier from Britain.
Mm.
And he basically has this whole theory about how music works and how different sounds relate to each other. And so they bring in like a toddler, a middle schooler, a high schooler, a college student who's studying like whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then like a professional
at
whatever he's talking about.
Okay.
And so you see, and I think it's so, so important and so really nice to see because you start with like the younger person. And so anybody could understand, like everybody comes away from it learning something. And like, so he'll be like, yeah, so you have a chord that takes you away and you have a chord that takes you home. What does this make you feel? Oh, like it makes me feel like I'm being taken away. And oh, and then you throw in some of this and it turns into a journey and you're back home.
He's presenting this to all levels of people right now?
That's like how he would say it to like a toddler,
okay.
Right? And so then he, you know, fast forward, you get to the college student. He's like, yeah, so you take the secondary dominant and then you make it resolve to the dominant, which then resolves to the tonic. And that's also being used by the supertonic over to create some of that energy, right? So you take a flat 6, throw it over the 5, boom, you got jazz, right? And like, so it's like that.
That's jazz, baby.
That's jazz, baby. And so like the whole point of what I'm trying to say is I think that like you can be better. Like everybody could always be better and maybe you could get more people in, but it doesn't necessarily make you bad to be average.
Okay. So you think that's an example of someone who's exceptional at teaching?
Like what I just said?
Yeah, that they can absolutely reach different. Okay.
And he's, because that's another thing. You could be so good at something and not be a great teacher.
Yeah.
Like if you're super talented
definitely
at something.
Had a few of those.
Yeah, like you might not know how to explain how you can do it, but I just can. I don't know. You know what I mean? So definitely a thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the downfalls of education is that sometimes you'll have these like extreme professionals. I'm not going to name any names.
Okay.
But I'm in a class right now The guy literally wrote the textbook. Like,
yeah.
He gave us the textbook, and his name is on the book.
Yeah.
It's just him. And it seems like, clinically, he was a really good researcher. Mm-hmm. Like, he knew what he was doing. I'm not going to give it away what class
is. Yeah, because I know which class
you're taking. I want to get a good grade. So.
He's not going to listen. Nobody listens to this.
Stop. basically, he seems like he was a really good researcher. Mm-hmm. And when he presents his information, like, of his own studies, or when he presents any research studies, he's, like, eyes light up, and he's usually kind of slunched over, and his whole body opens up, and he's, all of a sudden, he's, like, talking to a whole crowd,
That's
and he's
so
engaged.
Funny.
And then when it comes to actually teaching the information, putting it into words that someone like me might need some help with, he falls short. He seems like he was a great researcher.
Mm-hmm.
But when he came into the field of education, he wasn't prepared to be an educator.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if...
So what class is this so people can know which class not to take?
Stop. I hear the teacher who teaches the other two quarters during the school year is much better.
Okay.
It's fine. We're fine. Classes are fine. So. The midterm is coming up. We're not going to say anything bad. So I'm wondering if someone like him can be taught. Like, for the professionals that come into education, kind of like as a second phase of their career,
mm-hmm.
Can they be, is there some sort of, like, course or, I don't even know what format it would be in.
Right.
But teaching to be a better educator. Like, you're so passionate about this field. You just spent 25 years doing research, and now you've decided to take a career change. Like, you chose education. Clearly, you're interested in it. You chose college-level kids, mm-hmm. or students, adults, whatever we are. you didn't choose high school. You didn't choose grammar school, any of that. Clearly, this is a chosen field. How can we make you better at it? Is there like a secondary programming? Is there I feel like an online course. Everyone hates online courses.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Everyone hates online courses. But how do you teach someone to be a good educator? Do you have to go to the extent of, like, getting some sort of graduate degree or a degree in education?
What do you think about, like, so also to me, what if, like, can people be better educators on some topics than others?
Mm.
Or are you, like, is your baseline level of how I teach things, is that the same across all of the things that you could teach? So, like, do you think that he could teach something else better? Or is that an example of how he just is as an educator, and he would actually just need to get better at educating in order to see all of those get better?
No, I think it's the latter of what you just said, mm-hmm. that, like, every teacher has a teaching style. You recognize it basically within spending an hour with them. You can recognize their format of, like, teaching directly to you, speaking verbally to you versus mm-hmm. using the board versus PowerPoints versus engaging in activities. Yes, it depends on the material, and it probably varies in, like, the type of classes that they're teaching. But my guess is that general style is something that has to be taught. And yes, it's personalized, and teachers, I'm sure, are made aware of, like, several different techniques in teaching.
Right.
But that style is something that needs to be personalized and cultivated and made available for students. It's, like, approachable, like a type of... I don't want to say teaching, but that's redundant.
That's okay.
That students can feel like they can connect to. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Or, like, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, or, like, we'll just suffer through professors who aren't good.
Either way it works, I still get my degree.
Yeah.
But, like, at what cost, though?
Mm.
You know?
Mental health, ? Different topic.
Yeah, that's for, like, next episode.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Teachers need to be humans, too.
Teachers need to be humans, too?
Mm-hmm.
Or... What do you mean?
They need to be empathizers.
Oh, I see.
Coming back to the original point.
Yeah, we've come full circle. Mm. Boy, I just want this door to close so bad.
It's a sound booth that is a little temperamental. And now you locked us in.
No, that would be so scary.
This is how we die. Please listen to our deaths.
No, it would be a really slow death.
Yeah.
We have no food. It would just be like, it would be really sad. Like, we just...
I think we would starve.
We would thirst and starve.
Yeah.
It would be painful.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd probably just go to sleep.
You caused it.
We'd probably just go to sleep and then, like, not wake up. You know what I mean?
No, we're not oxygen deprived. There's a vent. The vent that you
vent. We're not going to crawl. What do you mean, the vent?
Never mind.
No. Go ahead. What?
No, I was just saying, we're not going to, like, fall asleep and die because... Oh, you're saying we're going to die of hunger.
Yes.
We're not going to suffocate.
No. No. I mean, like, eventually... We just run out of nutrition and probably die in our sleep. We wouldn't, like, all of a sudden be alive and be like, oh, I'm dying. It would be like your body's shutting down and you're asleep and then your heart stops beating.
Great. Can't wait.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. Thank you guys so much for listening. This was informative. This was actually this is probably the most formal episode I've done.
Oh, glad
yeah,
I can be a part of it.
Yeah, we hit some really good topics today. So, yeah, thanks for tuning in, and talk to you later. Bye.